You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
Hungry for adventure? Then travel to A La Carte, the charming land below the floating city of Heavenly Delight, and join the young cook Ramen for her daily dose of wacky hijinks in the new series Delicious. With a cast of eccentric, strong female characters, this wonderfully illustrated comedy comic will be out in July, but you can pre-order now by clicking the banner on the page for this podcast. Get the limited hardcover first edition, plus free stickers and an art print as a gift.
Wow, stickers!
A perfect gift for your child, or those of you who are forever young at heart. One of us strongly recommends this one.
You know, I had a teacher when I was in sixth, seventh grade that would legit make fun of me because I was reading. The only thing I would read was R.L. Stein. Anything that wasn't assigned, I would just be reading R.L. Stein, and she'd be making fun of me, like legit, like saying, "You know, is that all you're gonna read all your life?" And
I thought, "You showed her."
Yeah, now here I am reviewing some R.L. Stein movies, so in your face. But it really was kind of
fuck that lady. She's awful.
It's kind of weird because she was an English teacher. So I thought, well, you know, shouldn't you be glad that I'm reading instead of like playing with all those magic card shit?
I'm pretty sure you have to read those.
I'm kidding. No offense, but that actually did happen to me. But yeah, R.L. Stein was sort of like my gateway into reading like older kid stuff, from me Goosebumps too. And into Fear Street. And I think, you know, if you grew up in the 90s, he was that sort of like gateway author for us.
That YA horror.
The YA horror, and you know, it was a lot of fun. And those twists, sort of like O. Henry type endings that were just like, what the fuck? You know, for the longest time, he was the most popular YA writer in the world, I guess. Definitely in America. And so, of course, he had to be adapted. And I remember the first ever R.L. Stein adaptation was that Goosebumps TV show that was on Fox. Do you remember that in the 90s? Yeah, that was like, it was really low budget productions. And man, yeah. And then we got the Jack Black movie and the Jack Black-less sequel, which I didn't see. But now, of course, because we've squeezed every last drop of profit off of the Goosebumps name, of course, we got to move on to Fear Street. And that is exactly what Netflix has done. And they have adapted it for a series of films, three films, each one taking place in very different and specific time periods, 1994, 1978, and 1666. The trio of films are directed by Lee Janiak. Janiak? Janiak? Yeah. I don't know either.
Sure.
Sure, yeah. Good call.
Yeah, who co-wrote with Kate Terry and Phil Grazedale. I am so bad at these names. I'm so sorry. If they are by any chance listening to this, I apologize for the butchering.
But it's on point. It's on brand.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, God, just some butchering in this review. anyway, my name is Frank, and with me to talk about this trio of films is Adrian.
Hello, hello.
Harmony.
Hello.
The witch Harmony, not the lady Harmony. She's the witch Harmony.
The lady witch Harmony.
The lady witch Harmony is fine. And Tessa.
Hello.
Tessa was my partner in crime. Well, I was her partner in crime because she took me to this really, really fun event in downtown Austin called Queer Street, which was a bunch of DJs and just a bunch of fun music. There was a drag show. There was really expensive grape Kool-Aid cocktails.
We may have gotten a little swag. Tipsy.
We did get a little tipsy. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I wish I'd gone.
Oh,
it was at the Neon Grotto, and it was super appropriate because this first part of Fear Street takes place in a 1994 mall, which is all sorts of like neon colors and lighting and your Spencer's Gifts and glow in the dark.
And Gadzooks.
Yeah. And Gadzooks.
Do you remember Gadzooks?
B. Dalton. B. Dalton books. Oh, but I buried the lead. It was we had to go dress in either 70s or 90s attire. And so Tessa was very appropriate with even with a book bag, a school book bag, you know, 90s goth chick. And I had red high tops, bootcut bell-bottomy jeans, and a Jimmy Carter t-shirt from the 70s. So, yeah, we were styling.
Very much so. Cool. The original Odd Couple.
Yeah, totally. This has been all the rage on social media. People have been talking about this in terms of the representation, because one of the main through lines is a queer love story, as well as just what they say about the slasher film in each particular decade, specifically the first two films. I'm going to throw it over to Adrian. You want to give us a rundown of what the first movie is about, Fear Street 1994?
I think as Tony Montana said it best, is you need me to look at and say that's the bad guy, because I did not like these movies, like even like a little bit. So first movie, 1994, we got Sam, I believe, is her name?
Indina.
Their girlfriend and girlfriend, but on the lowdown, and there's this town called Shadyville or something like that.
Shadyside.
And they have a rivalry with the town next door, which is
Sunnyvale.
And they're all like, you know what, we hate each other, and there's a witch that is causing a curse. Every decade there's a serial killer who wipes out a bunch of people, and they're like, well, it's because Shadyside.
The town curse.
It's because Shadyside is
it's a shit pit of a town.
It's such a, of course there's people killing people all the time. And as it turns out, that's not really the case. There's something going on that's causing these psycho killers to not only show up, but also reanimate and not stop. There's something going on with a witch, and these kids are going to go ahead and Scooby-Doo it up and solve the case and end the story. But as we know, there's two other movies, so... Doesn't really end there.
Really over?
It goes back to the 70s. Yeah. Technically, there's four movies. We got 1994, 1978, 1666, and then, of course, you know, how's that going to wrap around? Well, by having 1994 part two.
As part of 1666.
Very well put. And this is a really, like, a largely unknown cast. I'm going to butcher some more names. Kiana Maderia, Olivia Scott Welch, Benjamin Flores Jr., Fred Heckinger, who I am all about this guy because he was such a narcissistic smartass in this movie. And he's on The White Lotus now. He's a really good actor. Yeah. Ashley Zuckerman, Daryl Brick Gibson, Maya Hawke, Jordana Spiro. Really, the only recognizable person in here is Jillian Jacobs, who does a really great job, and she appears in all, I believe she's on all three movies as well. I'm going to guess that you weren't a fan, Adrian. Harmony, what'd you reckon?
So for the first movie, you know, I watched it strictly out of nostalgia, because I, like you, I read all the R.L. Stine books and recognized a lot of the covers that they kind of allude to in the B. Daltons.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, those are straight up the books. That's it. I don't know who this pretend author is that they have this written them, but those are the covers. I remember these. It was very weird to watch and see the mall with all the neon and the Gadzooks and the Spencers and, you know, that being like the main crime scene in the first part of the movie. The first one I thought was okay. Because I went in with nostalgia, I think I had higher expectations of it. Yeah, it was okay. I mean, it's your typical slasher horror films, you know, which actually aren't my favorite things.
Oh, enough, really? You're not a slasher chick? Oh, okay.
No,
okay.
I'm not. I must have been as a child, because I really remember reading these books. Yeah, it was okay. I really loved the cast. I thought they actually looked like teenagers and were pretty well cast for their characters. Yeah. The characters are all new. I don't remember them from the books at all.
I kind of like that they made it. They really went to great efforts to make it its own thing.
I enjoyed it. You know, it was the first one. It was not my favorite of the three, but I enjoyed the first one.
Tessa?
Yeah, the first one I had a hard time I don't know, kind of getting on board with the main character. I found Dina initially very unlikable. Mm-hmm. I thought she was bratty and
I thought she needed to loosen
rude.
Up a little bit.
She like, was come on. She was really kind of mean to her girlfriend who like moved away and she held it against her. And it's like, Dina, chill out. Like, it's not
oh my
Sam's
God.
Parents are the ones who decide when she moves. You guys are still in high school. So I had a hard time really kind of caring about any of the high schoolers in the first one. I initially really didn't give a shit, but I still enjoyed it. Like, the production value is great. The soundtrack, like, they just hit the ground running with the soundtrack on this. Just Netflix has money to burn.
Yeah, you really do.
The soundtrack's amazing. Absolutely.
Even Adrian had a favorite. Adrian, I know that you weren't a fan of this, but was there anything that you yeah. that you didn't mind about it?
I actually like, of all of them, everything that takes place in 1994, both part one and part two, I enjoyed the most out of this trilogy. And that's because at least there was something kind of fun. When they're setting up the rules of like, oh, these are actually kind of zombies in a way, and you don't just get one killer, mm-hmm. you get multiple killers. And in the first movie, they hint at some killers that look really, really scary. And it's like, oh shit, that's going to be so cool when they actually come up. Like the little doll mask boy. I was like, oh, yeah. I can't wait for him to pop up because he looks scary as hell.
Because it's a grown man with that mask. It's just so off-putting.
I'm also not a big slasher fan, but I like movies that are trying to imitate the cheesy horror films of the 80s. I don't know. I felt like the acting in this, or at least the dialogue, was so cringy and poorly written. I mean, like, this is from the same director who does the Scream TV series on MTV,
which I never saw, but I heard okay things about
it. It's fun. It's almost on the same kind of level of this, and like in the sense that it's schlocky, it's mm-hmm. full of references, dialogue's not the best, the acting's not the best, but there's just some charm with it that I wasn't finding in this film. I think that might be because of the characters. I mean, we bring up Dina, played by Kiana
Madeira.
And I thought her acting, even for a movie that maybe you're supposed to be acting not that good, I didn't think she was that good in this at all.
I wanna pause it. How good are actresses in classic, like, older horror slasher films, if we really want to get down to it?
I know.
She is kind of like approaching it like she's doing Chekhov in a way. And it's like, you're in a slasher movie. Okay, let's...
What, is she like too serious? Is that what we're saying? Or...
I think she kind of is. I think a little bit.
I think even something like the main girl, Sleepaway Camp, you know, she's supposed to be kind of shy and muted, and she gives a performance with hardly any dialogue that I think, even though that's a movie that this is kind of aping, it doesn't feel too genuine. Like, there are horror movies that we get that are definitely throwbacks that feel like this comes from people who love movies like that. And there was something about the Fear Street movies that felt like this feels like a product that has to be made for a specific audience.
Do you feel like the tribute factor wasn't as strong?
I don't know. Part one has this really good kill, and like, that's it. So if you're going to watch this for gore, you may get something out of this one moment that, honest to God, I was not expecting. I almost like applauded it. Like, wow, I didn't think you were going to go there, and you went there. And then Fear Street Part 2 is a straight-up slasher. Yeah, I don't know. I just thought this was too silly, but watchable. It's watchable at best, I'll say that.
I like the aesthetics of it. I think it's a really beautiful film. When I started it, I thought, okay, this is good, because it has a really legit, good opening sequence. You know, it follows the blueprint that sort of like Scream set up, and you know, you open big, and then, but then you just gotta deliver after that. And it does open big, and it opens in a really fun way, because I am a fan of slasher films. I'm not a fan of gore, only because gore is kind of like a cop out. It's like, oh, his insides are red too. That's neat. That's cool. What else you got?
He's made of meat.
It eventually went to kind of bad, because the dialogue isn't strong. The characters aren't that fleshed out. It's such an easy trap to fall into, to write types than it is for actual characters when you're doing something that's so genre like this movie is. In the third act, though, we start good, and then we go bad, and then we get to so bad it's good, because it does get kind of crazy, and it's just goes kind of nutso and bananas and bonkers. And I thought, okay, you're not going to be a good movie. But you can be a crazy movie, and that's watchable. I'll be on your team. And ultimately, that's what we get with it. So it ends on a appropriately on a cliffhanger, and we had to wait an entire week, or
in
my case, yeah, or in my case, a couple seconds until I hit the next one, before we find out what is happening in 1978. Tessa, tell us what happens in 1978.
Okay, so in the last installment, they have an incident where they get a hold of someone and call them because they heard that this lady had survived one of these incidents. Basically, this story is going to be talking about her time when she went to camp back in 1978 and her experience with the quote-unquote witch's curse and all the murders that happened at their camp. Nightwing.
That ends up being the name of the killer.
His nickname, yeah, Nightwing.
Yeah.
She's just kind of like telling him like what happened so they can kind of like infer what their next steps should be to try and beat this. It's a really great throwback to camp slashers, which is classic. I very much enjoyed this second part over the previous one. I just like the teenagers in this one much better. Something about all of them felt like I could relate to them a little bit more. I don't know why.
It was the drugs.
It's the drugs.
It's always the drugs. I mean, yeah.
1978 had, let's see, we had a couple of Stranger Things alumni in this. We had Sadie Sink playing Ziggy Berman. And then in the first one, we had Maya Hawke, who is in Stranger Things like season 3. Yeah, Uma Thurman's daughter. And then do we have any other Stranger Things alum? I think that's it as far as that goes.
I think that might be it. But we do have some really great, like, Emily Rudd is really great. You know, Ryan Simpkins, McCabe Sly. He's now becoming like the pinup guy on Twitter. Ted Sutherland, Jordana Spiro is back.
Yeah, everybody was really good in this one, I felt. I enjoyed this far better.
Like, I enjoyed the first one just, you know, again, for that nostalgia. The second movie, I enjoyed as the movie. And I kind of called some of the twists, like, early on, but I still enjoyed it. Like, even if it kind of telegraphed a few things, it looks really cool. It felt like the 70s. The soundtrack's amazing. Yeah, I was like, well, this is much better than it has any right to be.
Adrian, go ahead and burst our bubbles.
Oh, yeah, please do.
Not to burst anyone's bubble. I mean, I'm like genuinely happy that y'all liked it. A movie should be liked. I'm glad that we're not all just kind of hating on something.
No, that'd be a really bad time.
I thought this was so damn boring. This is what I mean by I don't feel like the people who are making this movie actually like 80s slasher films, because there are a bunch of 80s slasher films that I would consider way fucking better than this movie that may be cheesy, but they're not done poorly in the way that I feel like these are made. For instance, like, not to call anyone out in specific, but like Ryan Simpkins' performance in this, I thought was just like horrendous. But maybe it's not even the actor's fault. Maybe it's the badly written dialogue, which this movie just kind of upped up on. If you're going to watch a horror movie, a slasher movie for some kills, and you want to see these people get killed, that's kind of the point of slasher movies. It's like, make these people so intolerable that you don't feel bad when they get an axe to the face.
There's some likable kids that get hacked up.
Well, in regards to that, it's kind of basic.
I love that there's likable people that are getting killed in here. I mean, I don't. First of all, I hate likable and unlikable. I hate those sort of like, they drive me nuts because everyone's fucking gray in this world. But, you know, I love that no one's safe.
Yes.
I love that.
But you can tell that they're definitely just not going the way that you may think. Like, they could push the edge a little more. And I feel like because this is Netflix, they're kind of just like, let's still try to be a little safe for our audience.
I was gonna say it's probably the audience factor. I think, okay, we want to take it really far, but I guess maybe there are 14-year-olds, 13-year-olds are gonna watch this.
You know, when you consider who the R.L. Stein, the Fear Street books were written for, were your 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds in the 90s. Like, they weren't always that blatant in the gore in the books at all. Like, the fact that
weren't.
This was at all as sexual, as gory as it was, is actually a big detour from the books.
And the violence was so tame when it was actual violence in the story. It was so tame. Yeah.
So I think they were trying to find a balance between that and traditional slashers. I think they did a good job, but that's me and you're just wrong.
I am wrong. I know I'm wrong because I know a lot of people are loving these movies and a lot of people are saying like, oh, the second one is the best one. And maybe I got just too hyped up for me because I was just kind of bored. I'll give it this. It has an amazing song choice that they do the 1994 Nirvana version of a song, and then they do the 78 David Bowie version of it to kind of cap it off. I thought that was really fucking cool, and I just could not wait for it to end for the rest of it.
I think I'm in that camp of where I thought this was the better of the three. I think visually it's really great. It has a way more twists and turns, some of which I did not see coming.
I think even though we know up at the beginning, like somebody's not making it out. Like somebody that we care about automatically is not making it out of the story. Like that is set up as these siblings and all that. I thought that was great.
The dialogue still isn't that great, but I think that there's enough color in the characters anyways, mm-hmm. that it makes them all watchable. There's nobody here that I thought, oh, this fucking character again, oh god, I'm just get rid of this guy,
smack him in the face.
You know, there was no one like that, and I love where they took the characters, like someone like Alice, who you think is so stock and throwaway, and eventually there's some color to her that you see later on. I thought the emotion was really strong in this between the two sisters. I think it had that dynamic not been there, I don't think I would like this movie, because that's something that I was not expecting. You don't expect to see that in a slasher movie. Some people don't want that in a slasher movie, and that's fine. That really, for me, made the difference. I think the production values are really great. I love that it was 1978, because that was a time in the country when there was so much tension that was under the surface. You know, it was not a fun time to be in this country. Things were shit. And I love that something like camp was not, that did not look like a fun place to be. That looked
like Lord of the Flies.
A pretty miserable place. Yeah. And so I love that. I was like, that, yeah, that was very late 70s. And I really appreciated that. I think the violence in here was really on point in terms of the kills. The ending is spectacular. I thought it was really fun. Based on the first one, I could sort of see them really wrestling with that ending, because like we said before, they're trying to gauge, are we going to be for kids? Are we going to be for adults who read these as kids? You know, so I'm surprised it did what they did with that ending, but I enjoyed it. I think if I were to revisit any of the three films, it would definitely be that one, just for sheer entertainment purposes. Done without the snakes, because I'm fucking scared of snakes. But, you know. But other than that, yeah. So, Harmony, bring us home to 1666, where it all began, because you're a witch.
Uh-huh. 1666. We basically go back in time through one of our main characters who gets to live out the life experience of this supposed cursed city, the cursed town, and their witch. And she sees it through the witch's perspective.
Sarah Fear,
yes. F-I-E-R, to be specific. And we see this, I don't know, Hamlet? I'm not sure how we would describe this village. And, you know, kids are kids in any time. They, you know, fuck up. They go out and they drink. They
party,
get into trouble, and then apparently bring a curse on their town. That's what you do as a teenager.
I love their secret code. I love that whole, like, yes, whatever shit they were saying to each other. Like, yeah, but I was like, so you're gonna go hang out after dark? Okay, that's cool. And you're gonna like take your version of edibles,
right? And we're gonna steal edibles from the local witch, like the local wise woman. And be like, okay, we're just going to eat these out in the woods and hang out. And they're like, that sounds great.
What were those berries? Are they actually anything in real life?
I don't think so.
Okay.
They might be. I'm sure it's something that'll poison you.
I don't know. Are there hallucinogenic berries or something? Is that a thing?
We can Google it later.
Yeah.
Do you guys want a party?
Yeah, I'll Google it later.
I'll ask some people. give me some time. We learned basically what began this whole series of generational tragedies, generational slasher situations, and then we end with the part two of the 1994. So,
what did you think of it?
Like I said, I'm the odd one out. I think I'm the only one who didn't like it.
I actually really liked it. I know. I don't know. I'm starting to doubt myself, Adrian. I hate you.
How dare you bring doubt into this house?
No. Everyone's feelings like are legitimate.
I know, everybody's feelings are valid. I enjoyed it, like, because I watched it back to back from 1978 to 1666. There was no pause for me in watching it. In my viewing experience, it was one long continuation. Mm-hmm. I liked it. I thought it was really a neat take to have all these actors and kids that we see in the other movies play other parts in this last iteration. Like, that was really neat.
American Horror Story does it, so yeah, why not?
But it still was a neat gimmick.
No, I can see that. Well, because it's sort of like the whole, like, in terms of ancestry and... Mm-hmm.
And that is not the same actors who get murdered. I like that, too.
I think economic reasons. We already got him on the payroll.
Yeah, we already murdered him once. Let's do it again.
Do we play another character?
We blew all our budget on the soundtrack. So, Adrian, what do you think of 1666? Any better or worse?
I like half of this movie. I like when it gets back to 1994. I appreciate the origin story. I think it's actually like, okay, yeah, let her get her revenge because she deserves it. This town absolutely deserves to die. That being said, I don't know why that needed to be like an hour long. I just felt like it dragged. These accents.
It felt Irish to me.
It feels like people playing dress up. Yeah. And I kind of feel bad for the girl who plays Sarah Fear throughout the three movies, because you think like, okay, well, now she's finally going to get her film. And immediately they're like, no, you don't.
You're going to be played by this other actress completely. Yeah,
you're still going to be restricted to just like little pop-ups where you scream and stuff like that. I actually do like the backstory. I just wish it would have been a little faster. This is not The Witch, and it very clearly wants to kind of feel like that. But when it gets to 1994, I was kind of on board again, because it's like, all right, now this feels fun. Now we know how to win, and now we're gonna do the big climax, and the big climax was pretty entertaining.
Tessa, what'd you reckon about 1666?
Yeah, I do feel kind of bad for Elizabeth Scopel, who's supposed to play the real Sarah Fear, who apparently only gets like blips and flashbacks. When I first saw her headshot, I thought she was like related to Fairuza Balk, because she looks like a young Fairuza Balk to me.
Interesting, yeah.
Like, I could have swore up and down like she was her niece or daughter or something, but yeah. I don't think there's any relation, I think. But yeah, I enjoyed the flashbacks and the story, and I kind of agree with Adrian that part could have been wrapped a little bit quicker. We all kind of knew what was coming.
Yeah.
As soon as that one girl shut down that one guy, and just as soon as they saw what was happening.
They got the goss.
Yeah, they got the hot goss, and they're going to start saying that the women are witches, and we know what happens next. And for some reason, there's a scene where these two girls are looking in the window of the courthouse, because I guess women aren't allowed in the courthouse, and they're watching all these guys talking about, you know, she's a witch, and they do like this whole montage of calling them witches. I was like, girl, I'd be out of there the first time someone called me a witch. I'd be like down the street, like out of the fuck out of Dodge. I thought that was stupid. I was like, what are you doing still watching this? Get out. Go. We know what happens.
They're talking about you. Get out.
They're going to kill us.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of silly. Yeah, some of the writing probably could have been a little bit tighter there. I feel like whoever did set dressing for all three of these did a bang-up job. Because also when they went back to 1994, when they're inside, was it a Gadzooks or Spencer's? Yep. They had that poster in the back that says, have a day, and it had all the different smiley faces. Like, shit, I had that poster.
I had that poster.
Man.
I had those shoes. In the first movie, our first victim, her shoes, the little platform Mary Jane's, I absolutely had those shoes in the 90s.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, nice. Took me a while to get into this. It wasn't the period setting, but then it also kind of was. It tried too hard to be too period, almost to the point where it was like a jumble of period film stereotypes and tropes, and it did take a while. Part of that is the script, where they kind of knew how they wanted to tell this story in this world. I don't think they got there until literally the last 20-30 minutes of the 1666 section. I think really the turning point for me was the church with all the children, mm-hmm. with all the dead children.
Yep.
Which I thought was wild. I was like,
that,
wow.
That was harsh.
Like, that was intense, man.
But the fun thing is that church eventually becomes the
mess hall.
That's the mess hall at the camp.
Yeah.
So
it took me a while to get into it. But then I think once that happened, and then the connections and the wraparound started happening, I think it was a really great ending to the whole trilogy. I think it worked really well. There weren't any loose ends that I could find. It wasn't my favorite. I think it ranks third, only because it's a period slasher. You know, I mean, that's not a thing, and that's not a thing for a reason. And that movie kind of like solidifies that for me anyways. All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap into our final thoughts. Tessa, go ahead and start.
As I said, I enjoyed this. I wasn't in love with it maybe as much as some other people. I did read some of Fear Street growing up, but I don't know if I quite remember this storyline.
Oh, no. This is totally different.
Yeah. So as Harmy said, this didn't even exist. So that's probably why I don't remember any of it, which is nice for people who were fans. So they won't know what to expect, but they still, you know, they get something new, which I guess is nice. I felt like the production value was great. The lighting was great. The gore was good. What gore there was, which I thought was fine and sufficient. It doesn't have to be blood spray all the time for it to be a decent slasher for me. I like some of the lead up and the storytelling. Like I said, the first one, thought the kids weren't that likable. They got more likable throughout, and I eventually was on board. So I'm going to give this 7.5 out of 10 illicit kisses outside of someone's hut on the eve of a full moon.
Adrian?
So if you want a horror movie that has a woman of color lead, I know there are better options. If you want a horror movie that has to do with the LGBTQA plus community, I know there are better options for that. But if you want a throwback slasher movie, why not just go watch a throwback slasher movie? Because I don't think these people have. And by these people, I mean the people who made the movies, not the ones I'm reviewing with.
Oh, okay.
To be like, you throwing down?
I was about to say, I will meet you outside.
Big shout out to a friend of mine. His name is Luis Chavez. He made a list that, frankly, I agree with. Go check out The Burning, Chopping Mall, Friday the 13th, 3, 4, and 6. Happy Birthday to Me, My Bloody Valentine, Stage Fright, Nightmare on Elm Street, 1 and 3, Maniac Cop, 1 and 2. Go check out Pieces. Go watch Sleepaway Camp. These are all of those cheesy, but still good and still bloody. And
Happy Birthday to Me is genius. That is a genius film.
Yes, sir. Still bloody and still wild horror slasher movies that this clearly wants to be. And I'm sorry, but it's just not. And because these movies exist, I just cannot recommend sitting through 3 of these movies. I'm sorry. Wasn't for me. I know people love it. I am not one of those people. I'm going to give this 1.5 Bone Thugs and Harmony needle drops that I never expected to happen out of 5.
Harmony?
I'm furious and I'm cursing you completely.
Whoa, watch out.
Oh, man. No. This is a set of movies made for me, and I will accept the pandas if you want to throw them at me, the pandering. I enjoyed this. I would recommend to anybody my age. If you're in your late 30s, were you like a preteen and teenager in the 90s? Then this is for you. You remember Scream? Scream's great. This is for you. Fear Street, you remember these books? This is for you. Yeah, the story is completely new. Has nothing to do with the books that I can remember, and I tend to remember everything. So, except for times when I need to do stuff. It was like a more grown-up feeling than the books had, if that makes any sense. So I think this is kind of made for that nostalgia factor. I love the music. I love the settings. I love... it was great. Is it immaculate cinema? No, of course not. It's not going to be. But was it fun? Absolutely. Will I watch I'm sure the sequels they're setting up for? Probably. Yeah, I'm going to have to say I will. So I'm going to give this 8.5 out of 10 really disgusting lobster tanks.
This is a series that I was really hot and cold with as each film went on. And I think it's hard not to be for a lot of people, even the ones that do like it. Still, there was enough in this for me to recommend as a whole. I'm glad that it was 3 separate films, because I think this is a series that does have problems. The script is not the best. The dialogue is certainly not the best. It gets a little clunky from here, from time to time, in terms of the pacing. But I think that overall the story is solid. And the worlds that they made, the different worlds, did feel real. They did feel right. They did feel appropriate. I especially got to say, 1978, they really nailed that, because that's such a specific time in American history. And, you know, that's when really like the modern slasher was really on the heels been born. 78 was the year Halloween came out. I think that there's more good here than bad in terms of quality, in terms of production values. At some point, whenever I watch a slasher movie, I was like, oh God, that's such a bad line, or oh, that character wouldn't do that. And it's like, dude, you're watching a slasher movie, okay? Cut out some slack. So I did need to do that a couple of times, especially with the first one. That being said, this is going to be someone's, a lot of people's jams, obviously. This might be their go-to slashers, you know, these little kiddies who are just now discovering the world of slashers. This does sort of capture the R.L. Stein spirit of the original novels, which I'm really glad that that stayed intact. So, yeah, overall, I got to give this 7.5 grape Kool-Aid and Deep Eddy vodka. That was what in those cocktails that we drank at Queer Street, right, Tessa?
Yeah, they were pretty good. Tasted like grape Dimetapp. Took me back.
I think that was the point.